on the docket today is Virginia Department of Social Services versus Erica Betts. Yes, ma'am.
I won't be reserving any time for this. Afterwards.
No argument. You may begin when ready, ma'am.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Michelle Lomdieu. I'm an assistant attorney general, and I represent the Virginia Department of Social Services, which I may refer to as DSS or the department.
Counsel, as you get started, and I know I've cut you off before you can really get your sea legs here, let me tell you the concern that I have in this case. It seems that we have a young man who I think you would agree was a bit of a challenge in the classroom and in the school.
Correct.
The teacher went through what can be reasonably viewed as reasonable steps to, inside the classroom, get this young man under control. The young man was asked to leave the room, and apparently from the evidence that was presented, the physical confrontation that occurred outside of the classroom was consistent with what the teacher had been taught in her training to deal with an unruly child. And then it results in this action being brought under Virginia Code Section 63.2-100. Explain to me how and why the government believes that the teacher's actions in this regard were inconsistent with societal norms and statutory norms.
Yes, Your Honor. First, I would note that this is an appeal of the circuit court's interpretation of 63.2-100.
Right.
And although the court has noted in this case that this was a teacher and so additional requirements for abuse are required, namely an analysis to whether the actions are willful or constitute gross negligence, and that requirement is found in 63.2-1511.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, at the administrative hearing before the DSS hearing officer, the appellant or the teacher did say that I had received this training and what I did was consistent with the training, but presented no other evidence.
Was there any evidence to contradict that?
She could not provide any recent training documentation. She had.
That wasn't my question. Was there any evidence to contradict what she said?
Yes. In the record, the local department produced evidence that the training she referenced did warn teachers that physical contact was a risk and that it should only be resorted to as a last resort. Also in the record, there was evidence through the testimony of the teacher that she could not explain why she was the one who held on to the student in the altercation in the hallway, that the student was trying to get away from her but try to push against her arm to get away, but she didn't let go, and she couldn't explain why she kept that hold, and she couldn't explain how the training she alleged she was provided
Who bears the burden of proof in these kinds of cases?
So in front of the DSS hearing officer, the local department bears the burden of proof by preponderance of the evidence.
Yes, ma'am.
At the circuit court level, the appellant bears the burden of proof, or the teacher would have borne the burden of proof to reverse an agency decision. And in this case, the circuit court determined that there was substantial evidence in the record that the teacher's actions were willful and would constitute or would be a violation of the conduct allowed a teacher. However, the circuit court was incorrect in its determination that
court,
actual injury
circuit
was
Circuit court required. Relied on the case of Wolf versus Faulkner County Board of Supervisors, I think, in the resolution of the case. If we were to decide that the Wolf versus Faulkner County case was the wrong analytical perspective, But applying the right analytical perspective, the trial court would have been right. Would we be within our prerogative to do so?
Certainly that would be the court's prerogative, but it would be a reversal of this court's prior determinations of child abuse under this code section in Virginia. This court has repeatedly made clear that the statutory definition of an abused and neglected child under 63.2-100 does not require an actual injury to the child, and that such an interpretation would be contrary to the Commonwealth's policy of protecting children. And in this case, the
I know I'm asking a lot of questions, and I know that when I provided oral arguments, I prefer to have questions and just as work for my standard text. I hope you feel the same way. But in this case, what would you suggest is the intent of the statutory framework in cases like this? Because I find it hard to believe that the intent of the statutory framework was solely intended to focus on the child when you have a teacher who is put in a very bad situation and having to respond to that situation in a way that she claims, at least, that she was trained to do so. What is the real purpose? What is a teacher supposed to do here?
Well, right, and Your Honor, that is why for teachers who are acting in their capacity as a teacher, the separate statute of 63.2-1511 applies to those situations, because the General Assembly does recognize there are times when there may need to be contact by a teacher. But in this case, as is clear in the circuit court's decision, the portion that was correct, that the teacher's actions were willful. And so under that 63.2-1511, the teacher went beyond the physical contact that was necessary to maintain order or control. And that evidence was in the record, that the video showed the teacher maintained her hold on the child.
But was the child actually injured? Because from what I read in the record here, the child that was involved in this circumstance or situation had apparently been involved in some sort of altercation on the school property before and had sustained physical injuries. Is that fair?
Right. And that, Your Honor, is why we're here today, because any injury that happened prior to the incident was not relevant and was not part of the...
Well, it would be relevant if there's a claim that the teacher was responsible for the injuries that the child sustained.
Right, and so what was before the circuit court was the DSS hearing officer's decision, and the DSS hearing officer made clear she did not believe that those injuries, I believe it may have been a black eye or something like that, were not part of any alleged injury by the teacher. The DSS hearing officer did not believe that.
And also, however, the child stated that the confrontation or altercation between he and the teacher did not result in him sustaining any physical injuries.
Right, and that is what we're here today for, Your Honor, is that the teacher's actions in holding on to the student and essentially forcing him back and forth across the hallway up against metal lockers back and forth and kicking at his legs, that is what could have injured the child. And that's all that's required for an abused or neglected child under 63.2-100. Then the DSS hearing officer is required to look at whether the actions of the teacher were allowable because they were necessary to enforce
order. Doesn't that necessarily present a Hobson's choice to the teacher? The teacher claims that she has been given specific and certain training to deal with these kinds of situations. That's her testimony, whether you want to believe it or not. That's her testimony. There's nothing in the record to contradict from a presentation of the government's part. In other words, there's nothing that the government's presented that suggests that she did not receive that training. So she uses the training that she's been instructed to use, according to her, in those confrontations. She does that, and then after she does that, the government comes after her for engaging in actions which are contrary to a statute. What is the teacher supposed to do?
Well, in this case, there was also testimony from someone at the school that the actions of the teacher were not consistent with training or what she should have done.
But there was also testimony from four other people that said that it was consistent with that.
And again, that went to what the DSS hearing officer had to weigh. That was a weighing of the evidence. And
to follow up on Judge Alston's question, it's not just a factual issue, is it? Our credibility issue, because we're looking at what does the risk of injury mean? And if the risk of injury is not just of a scratch or a bruise, but a risk that could result in death, disfigurement, impairment of bodily or mental functions, we don't have any of that here, do we?
No, but again, that is where the circuit court misinterpreted this statute, because there are two portions.
But the language that Judge Beals brought, that's the alternate language of 63.1-100, isn't it?
Correct. So there are,
because the first part of it creates or inflicts or threatens to create, inflict a physical mental injury, or creates a substantial risk of death, disfigurement, and so forth.
Correct. So there are two alternatives, and the circuit court unfortunately conflated the two and is reading the statute to be.
Well, did the circuit court rule that 63.2-100 is limited to verbal abuse but not physical abuse?
The circuit court's ruling, as I make sense of it, said that threat essentially only means a verbal threat and relied upon Wolf versus Fauquier County for that interpretation, and that otherwise it was an actual injury or a substantial risk of injury. Those were the situations in which there was child abuse under 63.2-100. And I'm not sure how you reconcile that with the plain language of the statute in this court's prior rulings in interpreting 63.2-100.
So the trial court talked about verbal abuse, threats meaning verbal abuse and not physical abuse?
Correct, in terms of analyzing what threaten means in the statute.
I guess this is hypothetical, but if you threaten to hurt somebody as opposed to actually hurting them, trial court said that doesn't comply with 100.
Well, again, it's difficult to tell, because in this situation, the trial court or the circuit court appeared to be saying that there may be verbal threats that constitute abuse under 63.2-100 and referenced this Fourth Circuit decision for that understanding. But there's no allegation of verbal threat in this case, so we must look at whether there's actual injury or whether there's a substantial risk of injury. And that seemed to be the circuit court's analysis, which we're alleging is a misinterpretation of the plain language of the statute.
To follow the language of the statute, you're saying the two alternatives. You have the court creates a substantial risk of death, disfigurement, or impairment of bodily or mental functions. Is your alternative that you're saying is the threatened language, threatens to create or inflict?
Our interpretation would be that the first portion of the statute or of that sentence reflects three modes or three forms in which abuse may occur, and that is
where there's actual injury.
So direct action, and that's the creates or inflicts.
Right.
And then there's the communicated intent, which is threatens to create or threatens to inflict, or the third manner, which is allows to be created or allows to be inflicted, and that would be a passive action, which may relate more to negligence. But those three modes modify how a non-accidental type of abuse may be affected upon a child by a parent or caretaker.
Threatens to create or inflict seems to be what you're relying on, right?
Correct.
But the language threatens to create seems to indicate that the woman, the teacher here, threatened him. Well, that if you don't do X, I'm gonna. And you say she never did that. So I'm confused as to why, or creates a substantial risk of death, disfigurement, or impairment of bodily or mental functions is the only one. I'm not sure why that's not the one we're dealing with here.
Your Honor, that's because a threat may be verbal or nonverbal. Here, the court has made clear that all that's required for child abuse under 63.2-100 is the creation of an environment that threatens to inflict physical or mental injury upon a child.
Well,
here, the
teacher. Can I ask you on that then? Because let's say the teacher is so irritated but never touches it but just looks at him and does like this. Why isn't that a threatening to do him harm?
Well, in this situation, we would go to 63.2-1511 in terms of a teacher's ability to analyzing whether it's abused by a teacher, and that would not constitute abuse because there's no touching by the teacher, and so the teacher's actions may have been, see, I'm out of time.
You may answer, then I have another question.
May have been necessary to control the situation, as is allowed for a teacher under that situation. Otherwise, we would be delving way into the realm of hypothetical. But again, this court has made clear.
We've all seen teachers who are just at their wits' end and who just, you know, and so if at that point the teacher has violated the statute.
Right, and again, that comes down to evidence and discretion and that sort of thing by the local department and a reasonable interpretation of this statute. But it's clear that in other areas of law, Virginia courts have interpreted nonverbal.
Those are in your traditional termination cases or abuse and neglect cases with regard to a parent. Those are those kinds of situations. Let me ask you this question then. Are you conceding that the second prong of 63.2-100 doesn't apply? In other words, inflicts a physical or mental injury. Are you conceding that that does not apply? As you say, there are two ways under 63.2-100 that a person could be held responsible for violating the requirements of that statute. And in response to Judge Beals' question, you say that you're focusing on the threatening aspect of that provision, correct?
Correct.
Okay, so we can set aside the application of the inflicts physical or mental abuse on the child, correct?
I believe it's not necessary for this. There are two portions, namely a creation or infliction and a threatens to create or inflict or an allows to be created or inflicted by non-accidental means upon a child.
Which one is the government relying on?
The DSS hearing officer's finding was that the teacher's actions could have injured the child, and so there was a threat of injury to the child.
Okay. Thank you. We'll come down to Greek Council. Matter submitted.
All rise.